Today's show is brought to you by KickUp. KickUp helps leaders ask the right questions to get actionable data, visualize information to guide effective next steps, and track teacher growth over time. Learn more at kickup.co. Today's podcast is also brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, and yes, I do use their service. With such a busy schedule, where do you go for world-class professional development? Especially if you're on a shoestring budget, or if you'd rather go to the beach or relax on your couch rather than travel to some conference. Well, I've got some great news for you. Jethro Jones and I have created an online event called the Transformative Leadership Summit, which will include 40 videos and over 20 hours of content from top education and leadership experts on August 1st. And it gets better. It's absolutely free to register and attend this online event. Over 2 weeks, you will be inspired and challenged to become a better leader. Again, it's all yours for free. Register at betterleadersbetterschools.com/transform.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, I talk with Greg Salsiccioli, the author of Enemies of Excellence, my favorite book of 2016. If you haven't read it, this is a must read. Every reader must read it. I'm telling you, better leaders, every listener of the podcast, you need to get this book. Hit the podcast art, go to the show notes, click the link, have Amazon ship it to you in 2 days. This one is a game changer. We're going to talk about why leaders fail and the antidote of failure and how to make sure that you are successful. More importantly, how you sustain success. You're already probably successful. You listen to this show, but how do you sustain it? However, this show, this is a warning. It might bruise your ego. Put on your helmet, fasten your seatbelt, hide the kids, hide your wives. I never take it for granted. Thank you so much for listening. Let's start the show. Well, better leaders, I am so excited to bring to you Greg Salsiccioli. He is the founder of Coachwell Inc. and the author of one of my favorite books and my favorite book from this year, The Enemies of Excellence. We read it in our mastermind. It's tremendous. It will rock your world. My pastor said it will ring your leadership bell. Go check that out. But for over a decade, Greg has coached and consulted leaders to realize their goals and improve their lives. Greg directs the Coachwell team and inspires team members to pursue excellence as an example to others. Coachwell's mission is to develop positive results by inspiring excellence through professional coaching, certification, and coaching systems. Greg lives in Central Oregon with his family where he enjoys the great outdoors. When he's not serving leaders, he skis at Mount Bachelor, rides mountain bikes, and hikes with family and friends. Greg, thank you so much for joining us today on the Better Leaders, Better Schools show.
You are welcome. It's so good to be with you, Daniel.
Yeah, like I mentioned in the pre-chat, you know, I'm in my own mastermind with Iron Sharpens Iron, Aaron Walker. We read your book. It tremendously impacted me. You were gracious enough to do a webinar over there, and I lead a mastermind for school leaders. This was a must-read book for my school leaders. We read it, and I said, guys, we got to reach out to him and see if he'll join us on the show. And he said, yes, I couldn't believe it. I was jumping up and down. So thank you so much again for joining us. And tell me, could you share a story of an educator that greatly impacted you?
Coaches were a significant part of my life, Daniel. And so in high school, really, I had a coach, Bob Hedick, and Bob would... He would talk to us about character at the same time he would talk to us about how to be better in football. And so it so impacted me about his life. You know, the way he lived was just a living example of what I wanted to be someday. And yet I found myself, you know, at times not having the character I should have. And it was just because Bob was there, I still even think about him today. It's almost 35 years since I was in high school. It's like Bob so impacted me by his life and then by his example, and then thirdly, by how he taught us. I remember a couple of practices where he ran us into the ground and then sat us down and talked to us about, gentlemen, you know, how you live off this field and how you behave off this field impacts how you play on this field. And it was just something about, listen, you have got to consider your whole life. You've got to consider how you act and behave and how that impacts others. It impacts his team, the school, our reputation. It impacts the performance on his team. And I'll just never forget that association from Bob. And he was also, by the way, a phenomenal teacher.
So I know that you talk quite a bit about character within the Enemies of Excellence. And one of the things that I pulled out of that is you need to come up with your own definition of character and really rigorously assess yourself if you are demonstrating those things. You ask questions like, how did you, you know, treat people during the week, and really have those introspective questions. But how do you define character? What do you mean by that?
Character is a set of values that you have conviction about, and then you match your life with the values. I think that's the missing link for some of us, and it was even for me, is that, you know, I would tell people I had these values, I'm going to honor people, but then my behavior didn't match it. I'm like, wait a minute, there is a disparity here, there's a gap here. And so I really feel like for all of us, it's so helpful to sit down, what is your character core? What's the core key values that you say define you, and then see and match your behavior to them? You know, once you have a conviction about them, I think, so character is matching behavior with values.
Do you have any tips for us as school leaders that want to become more aligned with their character and values? Like, how do you take that first step to matching, right? How you live out, like your coach talked about, and what you say you value?
I think introspection is really helpful. Sit down just with a journal and just think about what's important to me. What's important to me? And then what's important to the key people in my life and this world? What's important to me? What's important to the key people in my life and this world? And then that, when you ask that what's important, then just write down whatever comes to your mind. And then look at that list and say, okay, of this long list, what do I have a conviction about? What do I have a strong dedication towards? And then circle those 3 to 5 core values. And then begin to keep them in front of you, you know, and let them be a little filter next week. You know, how I act next week, can I align it better? You know, and if not, can I apologize to people? Can I actually use it as an opportunity to bond more with people, to be more transparent? And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, please hear me. Those values translate through all that you do as a teacher every single day. The way you walk down the hall, the way you talk to a student, the way you talk to a parent, it's going to translate. And that translation many times is just as valuable, if not more valuable, than the educational content that you're actually delivering to them.
Yeah, that's so true, because, you know, in an anecdote that you shared, it wasn't the X's and O's that the coach taught you that helped you be a better performer. Your story said it was the way he lived his life, that he lived out his values, that truly impacted you, maybe influenced the work that you do today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I had some college professors do that as well. I had some other high school teachers do that as well. You know, one gave me such an appreciation for literature. You know, I had always seen literature as that thing, that class you just got to do and then get out of there, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, all right, I got to read that book. But he helped me have, he was so passionate about the authors and why they wrote what they wrote. And it was an expression of their time and their culture and who they were. It's like, oh, okay, now I get it. This isn't just words on a page. This is someone's experience, you know, captured and then translated now to us, you know, much later. And they're gone, but we now have a way to look back into the future and see what they were experiencing at that time.
So I think I'm going a little too easy on you.
Okay.
Let me start with this then. What would you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
My worst leadership mistake is not listening to people. It almost destroyed my marriage. I've been now married for 32 years to my college sweetheart, who I adore, but I almost lost it all because I just didn't want to listen, nor did I put the energy into listening. So, yeah, that was also my defining moment. We can talk more about that, Daniel, if you want to hear, but that was my defining moment up to the level of, I think, success, whatever that is today, and impact in people's lives, is because I learned how to listen.
Yeah, let's go there now. So what is your defining moment then?
Well, we were driving to the credit union to buy a car, and before we walked in to sign the, you know, loan documents to buy that car, Diana turned to me and said, "I'm done." And I thought, "Well, okay, honey, are you done with? Has it been a tough day, or are you done with buying, you know, used cars?" She said, "No, I'm done with us." I thought, "Whoa, wait a minute! You can't be done with us. That's not a thing you can be done with." You know, I said, "Let's anything else you can be done with." Well,
not that.
At that crucial, you know, critical moment, we then went to counseling, and the counselor taught me the active principles of active listening. And I began to use a pad of paper. I began to write down what Diane was saying. I began to repeat it back to her, which is one of the most honoring things we can do to someone. I say, "So what I'm hearing you say, Daniel, is," or "what I'm hearing you say, Diana, is," and then, "Is there more?" And they're beginning to have this connection. They're beginning to have these walls come down. They're beginning to have trust go higher. And ultimately, the connection we have today, the marriage we have today, I don't think we both dreamed we could have. But that was a defining moment. That crisis became a defining moment for me.
How did you two meet?
So we met at college. Diana was a transfer student. She came in her sophomore year, and a bunch of us guys were kind of in the commons area waiting for the transfer girls to kind of come walking through to see who the new girls were going to be on campus. And Diana walked in, and I thought, "Wow, wait a minute, who's this girl?" And then to my disappointment, she was engaged. So, but hey, don't let that stop you. I mean, engagements, you know, that's just a barrier to, but she was engaged when I first met her. Yeah.
That's a great story. I appreciate you sharing that there. Plus, it teaches us the importance of pushing through obstacles and persevering, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So again, I love the book, The Enemies of Excellence. If you could boil it down for our audience, why is it that leaders fail?
So when we see somebody who's a high-profile leader, Daniel, come on to a, you know, a 2020 or the old 60-minute show, or we see him on CNN Live or Fox News, and we see these intelligent, usually influential, maybe wealthy people failing, we think, "What? Why? What is this?" And I had to find out what the backstory was, because, you know, we've worked with so many leaders over the years. I begin to see these patterns emerge. I begin to see these enemies of excellence begin to emerge. And there was a pattern to failure that I define in the book and try to bring it out to you. On page 13 in the book, there's even a graphic there. And what I found is this: at the core of failure is a misguided or misdirected ego. That is the foundational piece where many people we see later, we see them, you know, when the report comes out, we see this sabotage. But what's the backstory? The backstory starts with an ego directed towards my significance, my importance. You know, this company, this organization's about me. My classroom's about me, and how well I do defines my value. And when you allow your ego to sit in that position, it's unstable. You're unstable. If I'm becoming the best teacher I can or best leader I can so I can help these students and help the world, now we have more of an altruistic orientation for our ego, and it's much more stable. But if we don't, if we have that self-significance, searching for significance, orientation in our ego, what it leads to is it leads to poor life management. Because we're so busy trying to prove ourselves, so busy locked in performance, you know, mentality, that we overwork, we have too many emails, too many meetings, too much prep time. I mean, we are over prepping for our classes, you know, and we don't have the free time we need. We don't manage our life well. We don't eat well, exercise well, hydrate well, rest well, have time off. And we're working late into the evening, then we get back up early again and do it again. And what happens is our life is not managed well. That leads to bad habits. They populate like rabbits. And now we're locked into this syndrome of, gosh, I'm trying to have significance, but I'm tired. And I cannot manage my life well. So now other bad habits are developing that can lead to indulgence. We may get attracted to overeating, to drinking, to other more destructive behaviors because we're looking for a way to escape, right? That ultimately leads to broken relationships, isolation, and then ultimately self-sabotage. There's an acceleration, Daniel. I got to let all of our listeners know. When you get hooked into some type of indulgence, there's an acceleration and a disorientation that happens in your life. Because now you've got so many things happening, you're now disorientated and you're now drawn in this vortex of failure and you're not even sure how to get out. You're not sure how to stop it. You're not sure how to reverse it. And the very key people in your life are now kind of alienated from you. And there's a very scary ancient proverb that says this, Proverbs 18:1, he who isolates himself seeks his own desire and breaks out against all sound judgment. And when they hit 2020, when they hit CNN, when they hit the local news, that's what we see. See, we only see that part, the isolation and the self-sabotage. We don't see the backstory. So that's the dark side. I hope we get to the light side and how to build sustainable success. That's hard for me to talk about, to be honest with you, Daniel. But I have walked through people with pain. I've seen them. I've walked through organizations with pain. And we've had to, I've been called in to address these situations. That's why the book is here, because it really was a call. It was a voice out to people saying, listen, I love you. You don't have to go down this path that over 70% of leaders end up going. You don't have to join them. Only 30% today avoid that. How about we increase that number? That's the passion behind this book.
Yeah, and that's part of the passion of Better Leaders, Better Schools. So if we can serve leaders in that way, we will have succeeded. Listeners, if you are resonating with what Greg just talked about, what starts with ego and ends in isolation and self-sabotage, I cannot encourage you enough to get the book as a first step, The Enemies of Excellence. That will be linked up in the show notes as always, so you can pick that up with a click and you'll get that from Amazon. If you're Amazon Prime, you'll have it in 2 days. Let's get to the brighter side of things and the antidote. And in your text, I want to quote you. You say that few people consider how to sustain their success because they're too busy trying to achieve it. So you said this is hard for you to talk about, but you're on the show. Yeah. You got to talk about it. How do you sustain your success?
So why don't we talk about that? I think that the key, first off, is to admit and recognize what level of challenge you sit at today. Are you a level five, at a level five risk? Level six? There are seven levels of the enemies. What level of risk are you at? If so, then please continue to read, because I do get in there and talk about how do you build sustainable success? How do you fail-proof your life and leadership? You can do it. All of us can. All right. The first key is to begin to talk to that ego, maybe even sit down with a key friend and begin to change its orientation. Why not move more to an altruistic existence than one that is that black hole search for significance? You'll never reach satisfaction on that trail. It does not have satisfaction at the end of that journey, because it is a black hole. So you have to begin to see that it's much more healthy and much more fulfilling to begin to change my ego orientation towards building something great for my students, for their parents, to change the world. I'm doing it, and I'll gain significance through helping others, not trying to search for it in my own performance. That's step number one. Step number two is to begin to practice patterns of renewal. Because in our modern day world, you know, we carry our office with us. We carry our work with us. It's in our pocket. It's in these beautiful things called smart devices. They are smart, all right. They're so smart, they're the ones in control now. Okay, we're not in control of these things. So we have to learn, you know, right. when my dad, because I grew up in the 60s and 70s, Daniel, when my dad went to work, he went to work. When he came home, he couldn't work anymore, because what he needed to do his work with was at work, right? And he had to, when he was home, he had to be home. It's like, and his work closed at 5. Everybody was rushing home to get to dinner by 6. Well, now the office is always open, isn't it? So the challenge now is begin to, you know, I've got to set real concrete hours of when I work. And when I don't work, when am I off? I mean, really off. When is my screen free time? You know, when am I, so that I can fully be present with the people that I care about, that care about me? Because if we're on this, we're not present. How many times do we go to now, look at your lunchroom at your school It used to be so hard to hear in there because kids were talking. Now it's almost silent because everybody's on these. Go to restaurants. I'm like, why are we bothering going out for dinner, guys? You're all around the table, all on your smart device. No one's even interacting. Stay home. It's cheaper. You know what I mean? So the key is that it's learning to then begin to set a boundary around your work and then begin to put patterns of systematic renewal. When do you exercise? When do you have a date night if you're married or if you're engaged with someone? When do you date? When do you play? I think we need to play a little bit more. You know, I think it's learning, when is my weekend? Do you have a weekend or at least a day off a week? You know, so it's beginning to practice patterns of those kind of things and begin to get back what we so desperately desire, you know, which is rest and sleep and play and recreation. And, you know, we've got to learn to eat well again because we've been so rushing around. We just grab and go. Grab and go doesn't get us the great health that we need. There's a little bit of planning there, just a little bit. And you can eat well and you can hydrate well. Most leaders that we coach are chronically dehydrated. So you need to learn what hydration is. And so all those kind of patterns, you can begin to practice systematic renewal. And I'm telling you, you'll have the energy that you wish you had today. You will have it. You'll have energy and insight. You'll dream again. You'll begin to innovate more. But it takes a little bit of faith, Daniel. Let's talk about the faith piece for a moment. See, we have to believe in our modern day culture now that if I don't work as much, I can still be highly productive and effective. I think we've lost that. I don't know if we believe that anymore. I think we're so locked into, I've just got to work as much as possible to be effective. Not necessarily true. In fact, that's actually a lie. You need more rest to be more effective.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that all the time. I read Michael Hyatt's blog, and he talks about the importance of napping, and which I love, and so I can't wait to be the boss so I can take naps, you know, and not get in trouble. And speaking of Michael too, I love his book Living Forward. I encourage the listeners to check that out as well. But when you're talking about boundaries, when do you work? When do you play? When do you work out? Right. You know, when you're on and off? What days do you go out on dates? All of that, I worked on my life plan, and that was through Living Forward. And people could listen to earlier episodes of the podcast where I discussed that. Hey, can we get specific and talk about you, Greg? What brings you renewal? And if you don't mind sharing, you know, what kind of boundaries are set up for you? When do you shut things down? What does that look like?
Yeah. And so I will say right up front, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not perfect at it, but I am a practitioner. Excellence, by the way, is not a destination. It is a journey. So I just want to say that to all of you. So I just say that as a precursor. So what I will say is, like this morning I got up, and it's not always easy to get up, but I got up at 5:15, and I went and I swim on Tuesday, Thursday. I lift weights on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And I swim on Tuesday, Thursday with a friend because that's part of, he and I, he's probably my best friend. And we swim and then we, you know, go sit in the sauna for a little bit and talk, and we talk on the way in, the way out, and it's a great connection time. And so my morning is my, when I work out, and then I try to get off and be home for dinner at 6, unless tonight I'm going to go paddleboard after this. So I'm going to go paddleboard for a little bit, and Diane and I are going to have dinner at 7. But we are going to have dinner together. So I think the key is that, and then at night, this is off. I don't see it. I don't want to look at it. Let emails accumulate. That's fine. That's what an email box is all about. Let it accumulate. You know, and then I come, I'm refreshed. I try to get good rest. But Diane and I have our date nights. You know, I play in the weekends. And I put in a good 45 hours of highly productive scheduled time a week, sometimes 50 on a heavier week. And then the rest of the time is the mornings and evenings is mine, and the weekends is mine. That's what I try to do. So I bring a salad during the day. I hydrate very well. And so I drink coconut water during the day, which gives you your electrolytes, as well as I drink a gallon a day. So take my supplements. So those are the kind of things that I do to stay renewed. And then we take time off. So once a quarter, we are taking time off once a quarter, whether it's a long weekend, but once a quarter, because we go at such a, you know, strong pace, there's got to be a pullback time. So I really recommend that. And then we take off a longer vacation every year. We're trying to take off a month a year now So we're trying to work 11 months, but that's for company owners, teachers. You know, you have time off. I know that many of you are trying to work different extra jobs in your time off in the summer. Even if you're in a year-round schedule, I know you're trying to take some time off then. But it's got to be scheduled and it's got to be honored. The key I find today is we try to schedule some of these things, but we don't honor them. Therefore, we dishonor ourselves and we undermine our own success.
So you wake up at 5:15. What time are you going to bed?
I'm trying to get to bed by 10. Yeah.
Gotcha. And during the workday, are you working hard? Obviously, you're working hard, but are you working hard throughout the day? Are you scheduling in breaks and times to rejuvenate as well while you're at work? Or
so what is that? 2 hours, I do take a break, and I'll try to. We're right here by the river, so I'll try to take a quick walk, a 10-minute walk if I can't get outside this time of year. But yeah, every 2 hours, I'm trying to take a quick break, and that's how my day is kind of orientated at this point.
Let's pause here for a message from our sponsor. Today's show is sponsored by KickUp, a professional learning data analytics company that provides an easy-to-use platform, helping school leaders optimize their PD resources and efforts by soliciting and synthesizing teacher input on professional development needs, creating an intuitive and simple dashboard so leaders can take immediate and informed action to support teachers, measuring and reporting the impact of the PD efforts over time. Schools, districts, and charter networks leverage KickUp's platform and consultative support to synthesize data so that all stakeholders, administrators, coaches, and teachers can monitor progress, identify meaningful professional learning actions, and demonstrate and share impact. Learn more at kickup.co. Leading a school may be the most difficult job in the world, but what if I could guarantee that you could accomplish so much more in 1 year than you've been able to in any years past? The secret is to stop leading in isolation and to do so in community. The solution is to join one of my education masterminds. We meet weekly for an hour and discuss leadership and solve complex problems. Text Better Mastermind, that's all one word, to 33444. That's Better Mastermind to 33444 and start your journey to your best year ever. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Now, back to the show. So we're going to challenge the listeners. My email list got this email. I stole the idea from you, so thank you, Greg. I appreciate it. The headline, and it was opened at a tremendous rate too. The headline is, what could you accomplish in a 30-hour day? So, you know, that grabbed everybody's attention. But that's not the question to ask, right? You pose that in the book as well, and you talk about the importance of priorities. We just touched a little bit on that, but can you share with us also how you go about identifying your priorities at work, right? Everything can't be a priority. Everything can't be an emergency. You know, I heard one of your philosophies, you let the email pile up. That's what inbox is for. And I'm sure you periodically go in and check it and don't have it open all day. But what are some of the other things, you know, what are some of the other ways and systems you have set up to prioritize your work?
So what I try to do, Daniel, is I try to put in that day. So everything is pre-scheduled. I set up my week before my week. Okay. So next week is already set up as to what are the critical things I have to get done. They are scheduled in there, and the time to address them is scheduled in there. Okay. So even for teachers, look at what you've got. Sometimes you're ahead in your prep. Sometimes you're behind. You know, schedule your prep time and then only use your prep time for what is most critical in that coming week. Don't try to get 2, 3, 4 weeks ahead. Just honestly try to just. So I recommend setting up your week before your week. This is my crazy little jingle. It's it's plan your week before your week, check your day before your day, and you'll be on a merry way. Now, it sounds so simplistic and elementary, but it is actually profound. If you plan your week before you get there, and I'm talking about workouts as well as dates, as well as time off, as well as your critical objectives you've got to get done to be successful, now what you've done is you've set your week up for success. When distractions come, you can navigate them better. When interruptions come, you can navigate them better, and you can move around those critical components of what you have to get done in your week, only if true emergencies come, by the way. There is only a few true emergencies. They don't happen all the time. Okay? Yeah.
What?
I know, everything's an emergency, right? Ah! But in all honesty, that's one of the best practices that have helped me and helped leaders that we've coached for over 16 years, thousands of leaders, actually. That has helped them tremendously. The next thing is, you've got to honor what you've built. See, if you put the time in to build that, then don't dishonor it. There was some intelligence put in that design for your week. Then go ahead and honor it. If you're in your day and you find a better way to do it, fine. But try to honor the plan you've built and then implement or improvise and innovate as you're going through it. Don't just excuse it and throw it away. Try that design. There's another ancient proverb. The plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. The plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. The plans with a diligent effort are going to lead to profit only every time. Okay. And so we're trying to extract as much haste as we can by designing for success. So build a design, honor it. And that will help you tremendously.
Love it so much. And love the jingle as well. Do you have any musicians in the family that created, you know, the music behind it? Or do you just have the lyrics so far?
All I have is the lyrics. But Nathan plays the guitar and David plays the drums. So both of my sons, I could have them. Maybe I'll have them work on something like that. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. I think that's a good family goal.
Thanks for the action step, Daniel. Appreciate it.
No problem. So relationships are key. Absolutely key to a leader's success. And most of my listeners are probably very similar to me. And I don't know if you ever struggled with this. We suffer from what's called a lone wolf syndrome, right? You talk about the need of a core group that knows your thoughts, your motives, your weaknesses, challenges, yes, and opportunities. What are some practical steps that we, the listeners, can take to identifying the core group, forming a core group? And if you don't mind sharing too, who's sure in your core group? How did they form? How have they served you?
So I think the primary key that I would say to avoid a mistake with a core group is please choose your core group members carefully. If someone cannot hold a confidence, even though you may love them and like them, they can't be in your core group. So people have to be able to have enough self-control, Daniel, to be able to hold a confidence. Because if you're going to practice vulnerability, you've got to know that that vulnerability is in a safe environment. It's not going to travel from here. Okay. Absolutely. So I would say that please hear that, listeners, that you want to choose people who can hold a confidence. Secondarily, what I would say is you want to hold people, you want to have people in your core group that are not overly judgmental. Just because I'm sharing something doesn't mean it's defining who I am. I mean, it might just be something I've thought about or I'm thinking through or I'm working through. So it's got to be people who have enough, again, emotional intelligence, enough maturity, that they're not going to overly judge you for practicing some exploration of thought or some exploration of trying to clarify something in your life. So they have to be able to hold the confidence. They have to have enough emotional intelligence to be able to not be overly judgmental. And third is they have to be able to offer, listen well, third. Fourth is offer sound advice. You want people that already have an ability by the way they live, that they are learners themselves, that they also take sound advice themselves, and then they're able to offer that to you in an honoring fashion. I don't think I've ever said it that well, actually, before. So thank you, Daniel. I'll send you the tape podcast. Yeah. So I have had some disasters with oversharing with the wrong people, and that has been harmful and hurtful. And so that's why I'm trying to save some of you some. Now, the benefits are tremendous because I have an executive coach who I can practice this level of vulnerability with. I have, Diana is a tremendous person in my life. My father-in-law is one. We've got several legal advisors, financial advisors. There is one of my best friends who's also a mentor. So I actually have a list of about 11 people in my core group that help stand with me and around our family and add their collective wisdom to who we are. I would not be here today without them. And I ascribe a lot of our success to them and to our relationship together. Does that help, Daniel?
Absolutely, Greg. And some listeners will probably be a little concerned about forming that core group because you describe some of the dangers, even though the benefits definitely outweigh those.
Right.
How do you go about measuring or identifying that this person isn't going to hold my story in confidence? The reason I ask, right? I lead masterminds, and you know, everybody knows that listens to the podcast. We've had tremendous success. I only have one group. A second one is about to launch on Thursday night, so I have a Tuesday, Thursday night group. We've had tremendous success on the Tuesday night group. I haven't heard of anybody doing anything malicious or of low character. But you know, when you're getting strangers together, there's some risk there. So what would you look for? Like, how would you measure that this person is trustworthy and I'm going to stick with it?
Yeah, I think it's helpful to define what a core group is too. So a core group would probably be a little bit different than a mastermind.
Good distinction there then.
Yeah, they'd probably be in a closer circle, okay? And it just has got to be proven over time. It cannot happen. It's got to be proven through ongoing relationship. And there usually is an affinity that would bring you together, but then you've got to, you know, there's another proverb that talks about, you know, friends, you want to gain friends slowly. So you want to gain this level of a core group member slowly. And you got to understand, I have been building a core group now. My gosh, it's probably about 8 years building the core group I have now. So this is not a fast build. This is not a microwave, pop it in, done. This is slowly through affinity, and then we begin to build deeper relationship. Trust is built over time, and as trust emerges, then we can invite them more into an inner circle of disclosure and then test that slowly. Now, I did share that some of those advisors that we have in our core group are paid advisors, Daniel. So, you know, we have several financial advisors, several legal counsel, my executive coach. Those people are paid for advisors that are professionals, but we have a great affinity with them, and I'm more than happy to support them, you know, with the fee structure. So some of them are paid, and then there's other smaller group as those that have been done over time.
Yeah, that's a fantastic distinction. I appreciate that. And what I've learned from Aaron, you know, some of the guys that he's masterminded with, they've been together for 30 years. So it's not that the mastermind started as a core group, but they evolved into it. And maybe if I'm lucky, that will happen with our groups as well. But when you're talking about the people that, you know, you're intimately involved with, doing life with, now that's framing it better for me. I'm not going to name anybody from my family, but I know exactly, and so do you, family, if you're listening, who shares all the garbage and the gossip. So that person I would have in my core group, and there's others I would elect to share the stuff. But the important part about it is you really get vulnerable. I mean, you shared the deep stuff with this group because, you know, just like your book, Enemies Excellence, talks about, that stuff starts small. It starts with the ego, and then you start feeling like you are unbreakable, right? That you can't do any wrong. And if you're not sharing how you're challenged as a leader, it just gets worse.
Yeah, I mean, who do you go share your leadership pain with? We all have leadership pain. You know, I mean, it's hard to be a leader. It's hard to be an upstanding leader today. So, you know, who is that support group as well that, and I'm not saying a support group like we're talking about in counseling. I'm just saying who are you doing life with, you know? Because if you're doing life with people, you're much less vulnerable. If you're traveling alone, you are very vulnerable. Even Socrates said, an unexamined life is not worth living. I agree with him. You know, I want to have an examined life, Daniel. I don't want to do life alone. I want to have people that I can examine my life with. And by the way, they sharpen me, you know, as iron sharpens iron. So one man or one woman sharpens another. I want to get sharper. It's not going to come on my own. You know, there, I think education comes on your own, but the sharpening is going to come through the friction of key relationships. That's where the sharpening comes. Just like you sharpen a knife on a stone, it's going to come through the friction. It's going to come through that interaction. That's where the most sharpening comes and has happened within my life.
So in addition to The Enemies of Excellence, the best book of 2016, what would you say other principals should read? What would you recommend?
So principals, I'd recommend two. Patrick Lencioni is probably one of my favorite authors. He's a good friend. He wrote the foreword for my book. And I'm not just saying it because he wrote the foreword for my book. He is a phenomenal man, by the way, of his character, the way he lives, his family. But his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, is a classic. The Five Dysfunctions of a Team and how to really build a powerful team and address those functions. Every team has dysfunctions, by the way. Only every team. It's just a classic. Phenomenal. Over 13 million copies have been sold, and I understand why. His newer book, The Advantage, Why Organizational Health Trumps Everything Else in Business, is a companion volume. I highly recommend it. So beyond The Enemies of Excellence, Daniel, I'd recommend it, The Five Dysfunctions and also The Advantage.
Yeah, well, like I said, 2016, The Enemies of Excellence, that's the book to go to. Listeners, 2015 was Essentialism. 2014 was The Advantage. So I'm a big fan of Lencioni as well. I've seen him speak at the Global Leadership Summit because I attend Willow Creek.
Oh, yeah.
And I've read The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And I just heard him on the Entre Leadership, Dave Ramsey's podcast. And I guess he has a newer book that sort of builds on top of The Five Dysfunctions. The name of the book, listeners, eludes me at this moment, but I'll link that up for everyone too. I think we'll be reading that in the masterminds as well coming up soon.
That's great.
So I'm collecting data that I can, so that I can defeat everybody in the world in paper, rock, scissors. So
awesome.
If we were to meet face to face and play paper, rock, scissors, what would you throw first?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know paper, rock, scissors. So I'm horrible. So I guess I would throw scissors first.
Okay, that sounds good. And now here's some would you rather questions that I stole from either.io. You can check them out there. Would you rather have a massive head compared to your body or always have a bowl cut?
Oh my gosh. So I would look like the Three Stooges, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Thanks, Daniel. Wonderful choices, dude. Appreciate it.
There's four more too.
Oh, great. I just love this part. I would rather have a bowl cut.
Would you rather eat nothing but ketchup for a week or eat nothing but mustard for a week?
Oh, my gosh. Mustard for sure.
Would you rather be accomplished and famous, dying at 18, or be ordinary and die at a reasonable age?
Accomplished.
Would you rather stick a hand with cuts in a bowl of vinegar or eat three worms?
Oh, I've eaten worms before. I'd rather eat worms. Yeah.
Yes.
I did it for $5. $5. I'm eating these fishing worms, huge. They're horrible, but yeah, for $5 I did. So.
Hey, and then you can deposit it. That's right. Last question with these. Would you rather win the lottery or live twice as long?
Oh, I'd rather live.
Assuming you have good health.
Too. I'd rather live twice as long for sure any day. Yeah.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, Daniel, I would say if you're interested in having us assist you in any way, shape, or form, coachwell.com, coachwell, CoachWell.com. We'd love to serve you. We have a phenomenal team, and we are dedicated to helping leaders develop and excel and live healthy lives. So, Daniel, thank you for the time today, and this is such an honor to be with you. I mean, I appreciate what you do, Daniel. And please can continue on and help educators, which I just, man, I love educators. I just think they are at the apex of our culture and helping it to be healthy and thrive. And they're working with the next generation. So thank you for what you do as well.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Greg. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Greg in the search bar. And the show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode and links to all the resources. Greg, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
You are welcome.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.